This is the Bookcasting Podcast, Episode 7, recorded August 3rd, 2012. Douglas Edwards, I'm Feeling Lucky. The Confessions of Google Employee Number 59. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/bookcasting. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Welcome to the Bookcasting Podcast, a podcast about books we read with guests you know.
Welcome to Bookcasting. Today's book is I'm Feeling Lucky, The Confessions of Google Employee Number 59. So we're going to do three things today. We're going to start with the start of the book, and then we're going to talk about why we like this book and why you should read it. And then we're going to give you a quote from the book. So, Tom-Erik, what do you have? Tom-Erik, yes, it's our guest. I'm happy to introduce our guest, Tom-Erik Støver.
Thank you very much.
Anytime. So, Tom-Erik, how's the start?
So, the start of the book is actually the introduction. And the book starts out with Edwards talking about a conversation that he had with Larry Page.
Yeah.
Bless you. A conversation that he had with Larry Page, one of the two founders of Google, a conversation that took place in 2002, so a few years into Edwards' employment at Google. And so this is a conversation that goes about like this. So Edwards wants to know what Larry Page thinks of him and his work. Basically, he wants some recognition.
Hello?
Hello?
Jeg lager podcast. Ja.
So...
Yes. Yep.
So, yeah, so basically he wants a little recognition. So he's kind of like going into some kind of corporate kiss-up move. And so he says something about how they come from different places, Edwards and Page. Yeah. And Edwards comes from, you know, the traditional corporate marketing background, and Page, you know, has done a lot to kind of made decisions that opposes his background.
And he's the engineer.
He's the engineering background, exactly. Yeah. So Edwards says to Page, admitting that, you know, you guys have been right more often than not about the interventions that you made, you know, about, you know, stuff about business and marketing and stuff. And then Page says, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? When have we not been right?
Yes.
He asks in, you know, in all earnesty, you know, he's not trying to be offensive or anything. He's actually wondering, you know, I can't remember having not been right. What is this not being right you're talking about?
Yep. That's...
And that's basically the end of that conversation. So, and at this point, I guess Edwards realizes that, you know, I'm not working in, you know, one of those corporations. I'm actually working at Google.
Yeah.
So that's the start of the book.
We're going to do a little bit more about the start, but that's why I like the book. It's because the way he portrays the people inside of Google in there with all their flaws.
Yep.
It's beautiful.
It's a very interesting. So Larry Page is a very typical engineer. He's very straightforward. He's honest. He doesn't fuck around.
Yep.
And it's, you know, from drunk people and children and engineers, I guess you can get the truth.
Yes.
Okay.
For good and bad.
Yeah.
Yes, and then there's this other thing from this other start thingy.
Yeah, and then he goes back to right before he gets hired at Google. So he's working as a marketing executive at the Merc, he calls it. It's the San Jose Mercury News, which is a paper newspaper.
Yeah.
Like a dead tree newspaper.
Good old fashioned.
And it's kind of considered the newspaper of the Silicon Valley. So he's well informed about, you know, all the .com startups and whatever, you know, all the stuff going on and in the Valley. And at some point he gets the feeling that he wants to be closer to the real internet. And one of the things he says, I think, is that he wants to be able to touch the actual cables and feel, you know, feel all the information going through, like, and all the people surfing the internet, all the millions of the people.
Wow, I can't remember that, but that's very interesting.
Yeah, and so he's kind of trying to find, you know, some startup that he can join.
And boy, when we look back, was he right? Look at the newspapers now.
Yeah. and he actually goes to an interview at Yahoo.
Yeah.
And he turns down an offer from them.
Which is very bad. A very bad offer.
It's a very bad offer. And he kind of feels that, you know, they're not at the forefront. They're not the real, you know, the real Valley.
It's great.
And
because his nemesis inside of Google, the engineer that kind of, he really, really, really is making his life hard, is Marissa Mayer, which is now taking over Yahoo.
Right, exactly.
As ironic.
She's the webmaster at Google, or she was at the time. Yeah. And yeah, so a friend tells him about, you know, maybe you should take a look at Google.
Yeah, yeah.
And Edwards asks his friend, you know, well, what do they do? And well, they do internet search. And he says, internet search? I don't think so.
Did he say, good luck with that?
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, exactly. And he just, well, whatever. And, well, as it turns out, he accepts an offer for a job there only a couple of weeks later. So
yeah.
I guess he changed his mind.
Yes.
So I guess this sets the tone for what this book is about.
Yes.
Which I think is some kind of polarity between business, marketing, and engineering. And I think that it's a very brilliant story that,
yes,
you know, it actually gives a really good insight into that bridge.
It's important to note that his profession is writing.
Yeah, he's a copywriter.
Yeah, so what he did at Google was write the copy.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure what he did at Merck, but he probably did a lot of writing there as well. If you do marketing for a newspaper, you don't really...
Yeah, I don't know how that works. How do you do marketing at a newspaper? I guess you have to write ads in other newspapers? I don't know. But he didn't only write copy. We lost Ura. And we're back.
We're fucking back.
Oh, anyway, I thought it was interesting, very interesting account of the gap maybe between business, marketing, and engineering.
Yes.
The good and evil, as you said. What do you got to say for yourself?
So, And the reason why, so yes, we were talking about that his profession was writing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so he's a good writer, basically.
Yeah.
But there's more. It's not your usual suspects working at Google. You know, they made sure that they have this process for hiring, which is extraordinary, to say the least. And some of the characters that we meet, they are, apart from being smart, they're also a little special. Yeah. Are you still there?
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah.
But there's more.
There's more.
It's a little bit the same situation as we had with Isaacson in the Steve Jobs biography. Steve Jobs said, you just write whatever the fuck you want. And I have a feeling that this guy has been doing the same.
Edwards.
And why? Because he does not need another job. He already has a lot of money. And maybe he asked the people at Google if it was okay with them. But I think he didn't. I don't think he gives a shit, basically.
So what are you saying is when writing the book? Or
yeah, he just writes whatever he wants.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah. We like that.
Yeah. He has a very, there's a very strong feeling of honesty.
Yes.
In his writing.
There should be more people writing books like that.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, they'll get on this bookcast anyway. Yeah, so. Yeah. And also he you know, he writes about himself.
Yeah.
You know, and not self-aggrandizing at all. He's just like, yeah, that's good.
No, I feel he's being very honest about his own shortcomings too.
Yes.
And his embarrassments in you know, in the first few years.
And also his yes.
So he's his position is brand manager at first, at least.
Yeah.
And then he's promoted to some point marketing director or something like that.
He writes the copy, at least.
He writes the copy, but he also makes, he has a lot to say about general brand decisions.
Yes.
And he also, yes, he has a lot to do with the AdWords when they do that first.
Yeah, he made up the name AdWords.
No. He made up brand words?
No.
Nope.
Because AdWords is Edwards.
Really?
Yes. It's his name.
He said I missed that. I missed that.
His name could live on forever.
I thought the story was that he had come up with a name and they had all agreed, and then at the launch, all of a sudden, Larry or Sergey said, oh, it's going to be AdWords instead or something. But I might remember wrong.
If you as a listener want to find out, guess what you got to do?
Yeah, you got to read the book.
Yeah. So, because he is not entirely ironic when he describes himself, but he comes through as ambitious on his own, like in a little bit pompous to us Norwegians. Maybe it's just an ordinary American, but he is very much about, this is my idea, it's good. Why is it good? Because it's my idea.
Yeah.
Yes. Time and time again, and he takes these little conflicts with Marissa Meyer extremely personal.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I also get the feeling that he's using his time at Google to kind of make name of himself.
Yeah.
Not necessarily outside the company, but definitely inside the company. He has this desire of being recognized.
Yes.
I guess everyone has that desire in some degree, but I think he has it in a larger degree, maybe because he's an outsider in the sense that he's not from the engineering world, but from that other world. So he has this need to mark his position and to prove that the stuff that he brings with him is valuable to Google.
Yeah. I think maybe that's why he sought the job.
Probably.
He had an anonymous job at the Merck, well paid, safe, probably with health benefits and the whole thing. He has more than two kids. How many kids does he have?
I have no idea.
Four, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Plenty of kids. So yeah, that brings us back to the beginning, I guess. So you think that he joined Google to kind of, I'm going to show them how to do business?
Yeah. No, not show them, but, you know, show himself off in a way.
Yeah.
More than he wanted recognition.
Okay.
Of course, it's very good to kind of, you know, the IPO, get lots and lots of money and shit.
Yeah. Because he did make a lot of money. I haven't been able to find out. But he was number 59. Meaning he probably had a lot of stock options when they went public in, when was it, 2004?
You know, this is probably something you can find on the intertubes, but we're not going to.
Yeah.
He made money.
He's rich. He can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, that's what we think. And he didn't write the book. It's not the Monica Lewinsky writing the book to get money. This is, I like writing. I am bored. I'll write a book.
Yeah, he's a writer after all.
Yeah.
And he did a good job. It's a good book.
Yeah, it's a good book. It's very, and let's get back to what I think is the core, is the people. So he has some real great material here at Google. And it's not like some ordinary company. It's like people are informal and they do stuff and say stuff that are, you know, crazy sometimes. The whole company is insane to the you know, to the contemporary standard, like this. We're going to touch on it very briefly in the quote later, but I would, so early on he's 99, just got the job, and then he's invited to come in on the weekend. They bus out to the server park, which basically is a hangar. And inside the hangars, he says, it's like a zoo. You have cages and like rows and rows and rows of cages, real, real tall cages made of some kind of fence netting or something. Do you have a picture of how it is?
No. Well, I just...
Wire fence?
I don't know. I just pictured it like, you know, about data, what a data center would look like today, but...
You did.
I have seen data centers today now,
cages.
And they're like just like large closets or kind of like refrigerator type.
Because I have a feeling that they have like this, you know, the fence. You have a fence that made of metal tread with big fat holes. It's just a lot of holes in a little squares of metal tread.
Yeah,
that's how
you picture it.
The cages. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, that's maybe not maybe. That's how I picture it. I don't know how it was. So, but anyway, you could see into the other server, the servers.
Yeah.
So it comes in. And they walk up the aisle.
Oh! I see what you mean now. Yeah. So between Google space and eBay space, there's kind of like this this wall, but it has holes in it, and it's
just a fucking netting of metal.
Yeah, I get it. So
he's walking up the aisle, and he can see eBay. So they got this Star Trek looking, big, fat, fancy, expensive server just standing there. You know, it looks good. And then it's, I don't know, I don't remember, but you got the big guy, Yahoo! You know, they have a couple of servers, they look good and expensive, and it's like 3 or 4 or whatever. And they come up to Google's cage, the cage is like, I guess it's like 3 meters or something broad, and it's real, real tall, and they have 150,000 fucking servers there, just stacked upon each other in racks.
Not in 1999.
Yes.
No, 150,000 servers?
Yeah, because they
You sure that's not eBay? I think that's eBay.
No, eBay had a little one. So no,
eBay had more servers than Google.
No, they had a big expensive one. So you buy a special kind of server, but what Google did, they just had computers.
Yeah, they bought crap.
And they put it together, so it's not a real server. It's just computers.
Yeah, they bought crap parts. Each other. But they had more servers than eBay. I don't know.
No, sir, eBay had a big one.
It had one big one. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. So what's the point? Is, it's full of computers. You know, there. It's not. None of them has a casing. It's just like boards, boards and boards and boards of computer boards, with cables. And then they are assigned to do stuff in there. So his assignment is you take the cables and you comb them with your fingers to straighten them out so that the electricity goes a little faster through. Yeah, it all sounds stupid.
I have no idea what you just said.
Well, anyway, so the point for him, maybe I got this all wrong, but the point is clear. It's he comes in there, he sees the slick, expensive servers of the competition, and he sees what Google is doing, which is just chaos, but an order of magnitude larger in a way. And he's just thinking, we are playing a different game than these other guys, cost-wise and also when it comes to the power. We don't care. We care about one thing, and it's like computing power, nothing else. And then it talks a little bit more about how they do the data centers and how it's because they pay per square feet or something, and they fill the whole thing up, and then the electricity comes by the square feet, so they use a lot more electricity, and they basically just sometimes they just turn the whole thing off. Oh, maybe it wasn't in 99, but yeah, I think it was. Well,
I think this is later.
Doesn't matter. People have to check it out.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is interesting because Larry and Sergey's approach to software engineering is just make it work. Just throw something together and just make it work and never rewrite something or start from scratch. Just throw it in there. And basically all the developers had their own little autonomous little world, and they could just, you know, they had to, when they had to make something, they just used whatever tools they wanted to, whatever computer language they wanted to. And basically what they did just, you know, became some self-contained thing. And so of course there was a lot of problems that came out of this approach, but their solution was just to throw more computers at it. And
What? I am trying to go on the internet.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. That's right. Anyway, so we will have a little quote from server farms later, but back to the core, which is the people. So he has, not everybody hates him.
Hates who?
Oh my god.
Not ever. Okay. Huh? What?
There is somebody in there who likes him.
Well, you know? I don't think there's anybody there who hates him. Is there?
No. No. Somebody likes him in there. And it's his boss. Wouldn't you say that she's... What's her name?
Not Marissa. No. No. I can't remember.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So she... Yeah, we can't remember what her name is. It doesn't matter.
Nope.
But together...
Are you okay?
No. I'm trying to get to the fucking insights. Anyway.
Yeah. It doesn't work.
What's that?
It doesn't work, man.
You know what it says I should go to?
No.
Facebook.com/pages/ILoveIslam.
What?
Yeah, I'm not going there. That's okay.
Okay. Go on.
Shit. No, I don't remember what I was supposed to say.
Something about his boss.
I don't remember what I was going to say.
Okay.
Anyway, so these guys at Google, they were very, very concerned about data. And he tried, our hero, Doug Edwards, he tried to use that, you know, he tried to understand it and use it and... You know, he was a guy, he got dealing with words, so he tried to fix his words in a way that he used the data to win the day. And I can't remember him actually managing that once, can you?
To use data?
Use data and then, you know, make people do what he wanted.
No, I'm not really sure... What he accomplished at all.
AdWords. No, we
maybe.
Don't know if that was him.
He managed to somehow make ads work and the customer he did that privacy thing with so when they released the Google toolbar. And they had in the toolbar. When you use the toolbar, the toolbar would send your browser history basically to Google, anonymously.
Yeah.
And so they had to figure out a way to tell people that they were actually doing that without scaring them off. And so he kind of. How he did it, you can read in the book.
Yeah.
But I think he managed to do that in a good way.
Yeah. I think that this whole thing about the Google page just being very simple. He was very much for that.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's not an engineer way to do things.
No. Definitely no. They wanted to fill it up, put all the information that they had, that they were going to put online. They wanted to put it on the front page, everything.
Yeah.
Just have people scroll.
Yeah, scroll 300 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's faster. This is faster than going from page to page.
Yeah.
So and also one other example which is illustrating is that. So he went home not that early either, and he came back to work and they put something on the front page. It was this guy, a Google employee. He was out bicycling across the states somewhere, and it basically was his letters, you know. I'm in Iowa, it's raining. And they put it up during the night.
Yeah.
And he was pissed, of course, but that's engineers. This is that's how engineers are. Oh, we got an engineer friend. He's in Iowa. Everybody needs to know. put it on the front page of fucking Google. And it did. Yeah. And that's the same problem that Steve faced too, you know? They want to do everything because it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think he doesn't really boast that much about it in the book, but I think he was instrumental in that.
In containing the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, he got a good feel for this whole googliness thing after a while. And he was interacting with all the customers who were complaining and, you know, stuff like that. And I think that he... So, a lot of the... positive feelings that especially Americans have for Google, it comes from that. It, you know, stems out from that they actually were able to show it.
Yeah.
Which is engineers are not so good at that, kind of being able to put themselves out there in a way that other people can understand.
Or trying to put themselves in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's one interesting thing that I can't remember if it was Sergey or Larry, but one of them said that confronted with, you know, why isn't, you know, all the things that they're doing, why isn't it working? And then he said, well, we have the perfect understanding of the world, is just that everybody else is wrong.
Yeah.
And So I think people like Douglas Edwards were, as you said, instrumental in actually making a business out of Google. Well, I think, yeah. You know, I think the, what they had, you know, the search algorithms and the ranking, what they had, what the technology that they had was, what they couldn't have done it without it. But they also needed the business perspective.
And if you have ever seen Eric Schmidt in public answering questions, you know it wasn't him.
It wasn't Eric Schmidt who did it, no.
He can say the things that, you know, is like creepiness incarnate. And yeah. And that's the thing. So, and he's like the business guy. He was like what they called adult supervision. Supervision. Well, that's good. That's I'm feeling lucky. Confessions of a Google Employee 59. I listened to it twice. It's good. You pick up different things the second time around. Also. Yeah, it's real, real entertaining. How long is it?
On the audio book, it's I think about 16 hours.
16, yeah. So it's a very long book.
Yeah, but I listen on it. I listen to it double speed.
So that's 8?
8 hours.
Yeah. It's still a work day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't know what this Douglas Edwards dude is doing now, do we?
I think he's just living the life and being with his family. Doesn't really have to do anything, I guess.
Yeah, but Larry and Sergey still, you know, still running Google.
Yeah,
they're also living the life. It's the engineer's dream, you know.
Yeah.
And I felt that I have a, you know, I don't know if it's the right picture, but I have a much more colorful and lively picture of how the organization behind Google really, you know, how it is.
How so?
Well, that's not easy to explain. Well, I can't explain it. But the thing is, they are famous for attracting and picking out people that are, that fit into their culture. And I read this other book about Google, which is by some journalists, famous journalists who was there a lot. And he wrote about the thing in China. So they screwed up in China. And then he thinks it's not because of the whole thing with the authorities. It's because the culture in the Chinese Google was not compatible.
Okay.
And because they could have, well, that's what he says anyway. So it's very important for them that people, and I've made an interview with a top guy in Google Norway, and he said the same. You know, we pick people, of course they must be the best, you know, the smartest, but they also have to fit into the Google culture.
Yeah.
And you get a feel for how it is listening to the book, you know, how they do stuff, how they make decisions, and what they value, you know, because this is not an ordinary business. This is not these people, they're not out to get money. Engineers aren't often, but these guys are, you know, they're even less so.
Yeah,
they want to make the world a better place. They're up there with Michael Jackson and Mother Teresa, and you know, what's his Nelson Mandela, and that's where these guys are. But at the same time, they act like Adolf Hitler. They're like, we know how the world works. Everybody else is wrong. You know, it's lucky for us that they make technology instead of war or, you know, something more destructive, because then we'd be fucked, because these guys are so much smarter than Adolf Hitler ever was. You know, well, anyway, I have to say that I'm not feeling very well today. I've been have a gruesome attack of the allergies.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's some kind of plant out there that I can't handle, and I'm eating my pills and everything. But so I'm lying here in my bed. I'm lying here with my sunglasses on, because the sunshine is making me sneeze more.
Is it sunny?
No, not really. But I pulled down the blinds. I have double blinds. I pulled down the blinds from the windows. Turn off all the lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I stand up, I start sneezing.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we could call it the day.
Hey, man.
Should we? I have a clip.
That's right.
A quote.
Clip the clop. Yeah.
We could bring just end the whole episode with the clip if you want.
Everybody. Remember the Facebook, Bookcasting. Go in there, like us, and then maybe we can get to the insides. The insides.
Oh yeah!
Thank you, everybody.
All right, so I'm just gonna say a little bit about the quote.
Do it.
It's it's back to the data center.
Yeah.
With the guy who's managing Google's computers. Yeah. It's. Back in, I think it's pretty early, it's in 1999, I think, or 2000 maybe. It's when they're about to get a deal with Netscape.
Yes.
So they have to put in a couple of thousand more servers to handle the extra load.
Yeah.
And this is just to give you a feel for the atmosphere and how things work. Back then, worked. All right. So you ready?
Yeah, see you guys next month.
See ya. Bye.
If we move every cabinet on this side of the cage 3 inches, we'll have exactly enough room to fit in another rack, Schwimm pointed out, turning sideways to squeeze down the aisle. The only problem is there's no way to roll a rack through here. We'll have to take off the side cage wall. They called the facilities manager, described what they wanted, and left for lunch. When they came back, the black chain-link fencing that had protected the side of Google's space had been unbolted and removed. Jim and Schwimm slid the rack in, cabled the computers, connected them to the main switch with fiber, and flipped the switch. Everything lit up the way it was supposed to. Jim double-checked the connections at the back of the rack as Schwimm stood at the front, typing in commands to monitor its progress. It's a go, Jim heard Schwimm announce from the front of the rack. The next thing I knew, Jim recalls, I'm sitting on my butt on the floor of the data center. We just lost the rack, Schwimm yelled. What's going on? He stepped around to the rear and found Jim on his back, groggily rubbing the crown of his head. A 200-pound metal crossbeam smeared with blood lying beside him, where it had fallen from the top of the cage. Ugh, said Jim, shakily pointing upward toward a batch of severed cables that had lain in the beam's path. We're going to need more fiber. You're the only neurosurgeon around, replied Schwimm, assessing the situation with both concern and an engineer's practicality. Do you think you can fix yourself?